Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Kate, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect workshop, Managing the Costs of Living with Cancer. And this is a very important call and one that we've planned for a long time and we're hoping you'll find very useful. We have a number of collaborating organizations that have helped us to spread the word about this program, and we have on the call today over 654 participants on the call. And you come from all over the United States, from every different region and state and county of the United States, and we're delighted to have all of you on the call today. Today's program was made possible by Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, Celgene, a contribution from Lilly, Novartis Oncology, and an educational donation provided by Amgen. And I really want to thank them for their support of this program, but also for the collaborative partnership in making this important program possible. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's information about our speakers and the topics they'll be addressing. There also is information with their websites and toll-free numbers for all of you of all the different resources and collaborating organizations that you can utilize in addition to Cancer Care. And there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. I mean, when you think about it, you are the best people on this call to tell us the programs you'd like us to offer going forward. Indeed, the topic for today is one that many of you have asked us to offer. We're going to offer this a few times per year because this is a very important topic for all of you, I know. And but we, again, want you to tell us any other topics or this topic or anything else you'd like us to offer, and we'll work really hard to provide the topics that you suggest and recommend. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Leonard Saltz. And Dr. Saltz is Chief Gastrointestinal Oncology Service, Head Colorectal Oncology Section, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Saltz is going to address an overview of understanding the cost of living with cancer and talking with your healthcare team about your financial concerns. It's really my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Saltz.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you. What I want to try to get across to you is that, as with everything else in your cancer care, talking about the finances and the financial effects that it could be having on you is an appropriate thing to bring up with your doctor and with your healthcare team. It's very interesting. It's becoming more and more of a regular discussion in medical clinics, and both patients and doctors often express a discomfort with talking about the money aspects involved. But it's reached the point where we really don't have a choice. In fact, there is literature circulating in the top journals talking about the financial toxicity of being a cancer patient. And I think that's a really interesting term because it's really bringing into the spotlight the idea that just as our treatments may cause some side effects such as diarrhea or nausea or tiredness or lower resistance to infection, another toxicity that we need to consider is what are the financial hits that patients are taking. And this is an issue for many, many reasons. One issue is that the cost of care is very, very expensive. And even in situations where insurance is covering the majority of the care, there are far too many circumstances where insurance doesn't cover all of it. And even a small percentage of a large number can wind up being quite a lot of money. So one needs to be careful in terms of understanding both what kind of coverage you do or do not have for a particular treatment. It doesn't need to be the deciding factor, but it needs to be a factor that is considered and a factor that is discussed. If you're in a situation where your insurance covers 80% of the cost and the cost is $10, you can cover that other 20% with no problem. But if you've got 80% coverage and the cost is $10,000, that's very different. And it's not uncommon to have individual cancer drugs costing $10,000 per dose or more. So it's reasonable to ask questions like, what does this treatment cost? What will this treatment cost me? Now, answering that question may be something your doctor isn't immediately able to do because it's not a straightforward question, because that part, what will it cost you, the patient, will affect a lot in terms of what your coverage is. And your doctor may need to refer you to either the business manager of the office or practice or some other source to understand what is covered and what is not, or perhaps to your insurance carrier to help you understand what your benefits are and what they're not. But I can't emphasize enough the importance of feeling comfortable bringing up the topic. What we as doctors are becoming aware of far later than we should have is that at times patients, out of discomfort for bringing up the topic, are simply not doing the care, the treatments that we think they're doing, not filling prescriptions because the copay is too high, not taking their medicines as often as they should because they're trying to stretch it out. And if that is in fact something that could be happening, it's much more beneficial for everybody concerned for the doctor to know about it and be able to intervene on that topic and work with you rather than you trying to figure out for yourself which medicine is more important or do I really need to do that. It is fair to ask your doctor when he or she says, okay, we need to start this medicine, or we need this kind of scan, or this kind of workup, or I need this kind of procedure, to say, help me understand why we need to do that. If we're going to do a CAT scan every 6 months, why is that better than every 12? Because you may get a certain amount of charge per scan. Are we going to do a CAT scan and a PET scan? Do I pay for both? Do I really need both? What if we, you know, what? How much will that cost me? What will be the downside if we do just one or the other? These are the kinds of questions that don't necessarily cross people's minds, but I think in terms of the partnership that needs to exist between a doctor and a patient, these are reasonable and fair questions to have an exchange on. If the doctor can reassure you that this is something that is absolutely necessary and something that's covered, that's very reassuring, one less thing to worry about. If the doctor is aware that you're experiencing a substantial copay that's causing you financial difficulties or that you don't have coverage for certain kinds of medicines, that might cause the doctor to consider alternatives that will be less financially difficult for you, because there may be reasonable alternatives, but without the financial issue on the radar screen, the doctor might not have adequately considered them. So again, this is something that is an evolving conversation in the cancer care world. This is new to some doctors, new to some patients, but necessary for everyone. And in a world where doctors are talking to you about your most intimate details of your bodily functions, your bowel function, your bladder function, your sexual function, it seems strange to say there's anything that's uncomfortable to talk about, and certainly money shouldn't be one of them. Just as one doesn't bear a responsibility for having a cancer diagnosis, one doesn't bear a responsibility for having financial concerns about that. And please feel free and comfortable in expressing those concerns, and I think you are more than likely going to find the doctor is appreciative of understanding what your concerns are so that he or she can work with you to try to mitigate them. I'm going to stop there because we want to make sure that we leave adequate time for questions and discussion today, so I'm going to turn it back to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Saltz. That was really an outstanding start off to our call, and also to hear that everyone could hear you say that they have permission to ask their doctor about their concerns, about the financial concerns. That's excellent. I really appreciate that. And our next speaker is Deborah Wolf. Deborah Wolf is a senior attorney, Legal Health, New York Legal Assistance Group, NILAC, New York Legal Assistance Group. And Ms. Wolf is going to address understanding the benefits and limitations of your health coverage, tips on appealing medical insurance claims, and provider denials. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Wolf.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I'm pleased to be a part of this teleconference with Cancer Care. There have been a lot of positive changes in health coverage with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. I'll first be discussing how best to understand both the benefits and limitations of your health coverage, also some of the changes with the Affordable Care Act, and then tips for appealing claim denials. In discussing health coverage as well as appeals, it's important to know that there are different types of insurance plans, and these include group policies from employment, union benefits, and privately purchased policies, as well as those policies now available through the Affordable Care Act marketplace. I'll also briefly discuss Medicaid and Medicare. The insurance laws of your state may also require certain minimum benefits, so your rights could vary depending on where you live. This is going to be very general advice relating to all, but it's also important to understand the laws of the state you live in. As a start, the most important advice I can give is to have and read a copy of your policy, or at the very least, a summary description of your policy. This will outline your benefits, any coverage limits, and the appeals process, which we will discuss in a bit. Your insurance company can also be a good resource to call if you have questions about what is or is not covered. Even with the Affordable Care Act, insurance policies still are allowed to have certain coverage limits, so you do have to take the time to understand your benefits. You also need to know whether your policy is an HMO, which pays only in-network doctors, or a PPO that allows for out-of-network doctors, but often at a much reduced reimbursement rate. With an HMO, you generally have a copayment and sometimes a deductible, and that's the extent of your financial responsibility if your doctor is in-network. With other policies, your out-of-network doctor can often bill you directly for any amount not paid by your insurance. You do have to understand in advance the limits of your policy, so that you can make informed decisions about your medical care. I'm sure everyone has heard of some of the changes with the Affordable Care Act, and I want to review a few that have impacted benefits for everyone. Starting this year, insurers must sell and renew health insurance regardless of health status. This is called guaranteed issue, and a person can't be denied insurance based on their health. Also, most insurers can no longer refuse coverage of pre-existing conditions. Some policies that were in existence before 2010 are grandfathered, meaning they don't have to comply with some of the Affordable Care Act provisions, so it's important to read all insurance documentation. Another important change that has already made a big impact for many of the people I work with is the requirement that insurance companies can no longer limit the amount they will pay for medical costs over the year or the person's lifetime. There are no monetary caps on coverage. This means that an insurance company can no longer say, once we spend a certain amount of money, you're no longer covered. A health insurance marketplace now operates in every state, and in the marketplace, you can compare different plan benefits, see if you're entitled to subsidies to lower the cost, and determine if you may be eligible for free coverage under Medicaid. All of the plans available through the marketplace have some level of contribution from the consumer and may not always be the best coverage for someone with high medical costs. All plans must now cover essential health benefits. It's a long list which includes outpatient and emergency services, prescriptions, hospitalization, mental health, preventive care, and more. But even with these changes, policies can still limit certain coverages. This might include the number of physical therapy visits, home nursing care, or mental health visits allowed per year. Any limits or exclusions must be set forth in the policy or the summary description. That's why it's important to read and understand your benefits. If your policy requires pre-authorization, and most do for major medical procedures and radiology, such as PET scans and MRIs, make sure either you check with your doctor's office or the insurance company to confirm that the procedure was approved. If you have an HMO, make sure all your doctors are in network, and particularly if you're having surgery, make sure all the doctors providing care are in network. Moving to Medicare and Medicaid, these are both government-sponsored health insurance, and both have been improved with the Affordable Care Act. Medicare is a federal program with rules that are uniform to all participants in all 50 states. Medicare is available to most people age 65 or older who are citizens or permanent residents. And if under age 65, a person who's been receiving Social Security disability benefits for a period of 24 months. Medicare is not available to others, with some very limited exceptions. Medicare coverage consists of a number of parts. Part A, which provides free hospital coverage. Part B, medical insurance, which requires a monthly premium. Part D, the prescription drug insurance plans, which are provided through private insurance companies that have contracts with the government. And there's also Part C, which allows private health insurance companies, such as HMOs and PPOs, to provide Medicare benefits. These Medicare private health plans are sometimes known as Medicare Advantage plans. Similar to private insurance, you will get more preventive services for less, as well as a free wellness visit and the essential health benefits. Part D prescription coverage will also be improved by the gradual elimination of the donut hole, which limited prescription drug coverage. Medicare benefits are limited and do not cover the entire cost of medical treatment, often up to 80%. But as Dr. Saltz mentioned, the remaining 20% can be very costly, especially if hospitalization is involved. Many people purchase additional Medicare gap policies to supplement Medicare. And I should mention that these policies are exempt from the Affordable Care Act requirements and may even have pre-existing condition exclusions. So make sure to read these plans and ask questions to make sure that you understand all of the benefits. Moving to Medicaid, Medicaid insurance is a federal-state partnership with shared authority and financing. Certain eligibility rules are established mainly by each state and vary depending on where you live, so it's important to know your state Medicaid requirements and regulations. Access is based on being low income, with a limit on how much you can have in income, assets, and resources. For those who are disabled or elderly, or with a chronic illness, with higher income, one can often become eligible through special Medicaid programs. Some states have special Medicaid programs to cover people with cancer, so make sure to explore all options as it is free coverage. With the Affordable Care Act, in most states, Medicaid has been expanded to increase coverage to more lower-income people, including groups such as childless couples that have not always had access to Medicaid. And as I mentioned earlier, one application will determine eligibility for Medicaid or a health plan through the marketplace, as well as any premium subsidies. Medicaid recipients are also entitled to the same benchmark benefit package that meets the minimum essential health benefits available in the health insurance marketplace. Medicaid is free and desirable for many people with cancer because it offers often needed home care, home nursing, as well as nursing home coverage. The goal is to enhance the quality of care for all Americans, regardless of whether they have private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid. Even with these protections, claims are sometimes denied. Your insurance company is required to provide an explanation of benefit, called an EOB, for each claim reviewed. The explanation of benefit outlines the amount paid, your required contribution, which can be your copay or percentage, and if not paying, the reasons for the denial. It's important to read every EOB to make sure your claim has been paid, and if not, the reasons for the denial. When a claim is denied, your first step should be to call the insurance company right away to discuss. There are many reasons a claim may be denied, and often the insurance company just needs more documentation from your doctor's office to approve. Claims are also sometimes denied for administrative reasons that may be easy to fix. For example, the claim may have the wrong procedure code. Make sure to keep track of every call or letter, writing down the date and who you speak with at your insurance company. With the Affordable Care Act, health plans and insurance companies have to tell you why they've decided to deny a claim with very specific information. You also have the right to request a full copy of your insurance file prior to the appeal to see how they've reached their decision, including notes made by the case handler and any reports by the insurance company doctor who reviewed your claim. If a matter cannot be resolved by speaking with the insurance company, you have the right to file an appeal directly to your insurance company. In your appeal, document the reasons you disagree with the insurance company, and always include medical letters, medical records, and a letter from your treating doctor. And your doctor's office is always very willing to assist with the appeal, and sometimes they will file the appeal on your behalf. I often ask the treating doctor to review the denial letter and any medical letters in the insurance company file and respond in writing. Under the Affordable Care Act, your insurance company must conduct a full and fair review of its decision. If the case is urgent, your insurance company must speed up this process. If they deny the appeal, you then have the right to request an external review, which gives you the right to file an appeal, a second appeal, to an outside, objective, and independent panel, no matter where you live and what type of health insurance you have. This means that independent medical professionals with no financial stake in the claim make the decision. The insurance company no longer gets the final say over many benefit decisions. If the external reviewer overturns your insurer's denial, your insurance company must give you the payment or services you requested in the claim. Another important Affordable Care Act protection will be expanded consumer assistance. This requires that states designate an independent Office of Health Insurance Consumer Assistance that will respond to inquiries and complaints by consumers and help file complaints and appeals. If your state has an insurance department or a state attorney general's office, they're also often very helpful in resolving healthcare disputes. Finally, it's very important to make sure you understand your time limits to file appeals, as these are very strict deadlines. If you have a policy from employment, the time limit is 180 days. For other plans, the deadline will be set forth in the policy. But remember that an insurance policy is a contract, meaning that you must adhere to the rules laid out in the contract. The good news is that around half of all denied claims that are appealed to the top are finally allowed coverage, and the percentage for external reviews is even higher. Now, Medicaid and Medicare are both governed by federal or state law, but you also are entitled to an appeal and an external review if your claim is denied. If your claim is denied, you'll receive written notice about how to appeal, so you must read these notices. Again, make sure you understand the reason for the denial and present your arguments clearly. When appealed, even a higher number of these cases are reversed. And if you draw on all the resources available to you and have adequate medical support for your claim, you stand a good chance of having your claim paid. So to summarize, it's important to read your healthcare policy so that you understand your coverage, what is required of you, how to appeal, and any deadlines that are imposed. Appeal deadlines are strict, so make sure to read the explanation of benefit from the insurance company and respond on time. I know it's often difficult to keep on top of insurance matters with so much else going on, but with an understanding of what your rights and responsibilities are, as well as help from the Affordable Care Act Consumer Assistance Program, you should be able to navigate any insurance issues or questions that come up. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Ms. Wolf. That was really a superb, really presentation of people's rights and the knowledge of this area that's really important. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Michelle McCourt. And Ms. McCourt is Director, Cancer Care Copayment Assistance Foundation, Cancer Care. And she is going to be addressing understanding and accessing copay assistance programs. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. McCourt.
Thank you, Carolyn. Good afternoon, everyone. My topic today is to discuss understanding and accessing copayment assistance programs. As Director of Cancer Care's Copayment Foundation, I am constantly hearing from patients and families saying that they don't know about these programs and wish they knew about them sooner. We all know that cancer is an expensive disease and that medical costs is the leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States. The stress of worrying about how to afford paying for treatments is very wearing on a patient and something they should not have to do in addition to trying to manage their disease. All too often, once a patient finds out the cost of treatment, they opt out and decide not to have the treatment. They don't want to put their family through the expense and create a financial hardship. Others will try to stretch the medication and turn a 30-day supply into a 60-day supply, rendering the treatment ineffective and making the patient noncompliant with their therapy, which is a big issue for oncology patients and results in poor outcomes. So what is a patient to do? How can they find out about these programs, and how can they get help? The first step is to know your insurance coverage and any limitations to your coverage. This includes your prescription coverage. Do you have a copay or coinsurance amount where you pay a percentage of the total drug cost? Is there a deductible? Is the medication being prescribed covered, and how is it covered? It may be covered in a different tier or level of coverage, which changes the prescription copay amount that you are used to paying. For example, maybe you have a $10 copay for generic prescriptions and a $25 copay for brand, but for specialty tier medications, you have to pay a percentage of the cost. Most of the oral targeted treatments for cancer are classified as specialty medications. To find out about your coverage, you should contact your insurance provider directly and ask if the medication is covered and what your out-of-pocket costs will be. Another way to find out about coverage is to discuss the issue with your oncologist office or your pharmacist. There may be a financial counselor or oncology social worker on staff that can assist you with this process. With oncology medications, there is usually a toll-free number that you can call or a website that will provide reimbursement support. The reimbursement support customer service representative will contact your insurance provider to get a summary of your benefits. They will process any prior authorization if one is required and can even assist with the appeal process if your insurance denies coverage. Once they have determined your out-of-pocket costs, they can refer you to organizations to apply for assistance. They can also let you know about coupons or discount cards that might be available to lower your costs or provide interim assistance while you apply to copayment foundation. If you have no insurance, they can refer you to patient assistance programs that provide provide free drug to eligible patients. Once you've been referred to an organization to apply for assistance, get in touch with them right away to start the application process. There are approximately 8 national copayment assistance foundations that offer assistance to cancer patients. These foundations are administered by independent, not-for-profit organizations. Some provide assistance with copayments and coinsurance for prescription medications, while others also offer assistance with insurance premiums. Each foundation has its own criteria and process, but for the most part, all foundations have established financial eligibility criteria that needs to be documented as part of the application process. If approved, most foundations will establish a third-party payer relationship with the pharmacy or infusion provider to arrange for direct billing for easier access for the patient. And most award assistance for 1 year, and then the patient can reapply. A couple of things to keep in mind when applying for copayment assistance. All of the programs are disease-specific. You have to have the specific diagnosis that the foundation has funding for. You have to meet the financial criteria established by the foundation and submit proof of income in order to be eligible. All applications are processed in the order that they are received to the extent that funding is available. Funding is limited, and there will be funds that close due to lack of funding. Now I want to talk a little bit about resources specifically for Medicare patients. Patients who have Medicare as their primary insurance and have a limited income but aren't eligible for full state assistance often don't realize that there are other types of coverage that might be available to them through a Medicare savings program. You can get help from your state to pay for your Medicare premiums and in some cases to pay for your Medicare deductibles, coinsurance, and copayments if you meet certain conditions. There are 4 types of Medicare savings programs: Qualified Medicare Beneficiary, or QMB, Specified Low-Income Medicare Beneficiary, SLMB, Qualified Individual, or QI, Qualified Disabled and Working Individuals, QDWI. If you have prescription drug coverage through a Medicare prescription drug plan or a Part D plan, you may be eligible for extra help or low-income subsidy. If eligible, this assistance would greatly reduce your out-of-pocket cost for prescriptions. There are also state pharmaceutical programs and programs for the elderly. To find out more about these programs and to apply for assistance, you can go online to Medicare.gov and click on Your Medicare Cost tab, or you can call Social Security at 1-800-772-1213. In summary, ways to find out about copayment assistance programs include internet searches. Most medications have their own website with links for reimbursement resources. Your doctor's office. Make an appointment to meet with a financial counselor or social worker on staff who could help you find resources for financial assistance. Advocacy groups such as Cancer Care and the American Cancer Society are great resources to find out about programs. And informational websites such as cancerfact.org, which is a website that provides national and local resources that specifically offer financial assistance for cancer-related costs. NeedyMeds.org is a great website that provides information on programs that are available to help patients to find out about patient assistance programs. Thank you. This concludes my presentation.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. That was a really wonderful presentation, very informative, and I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you very much. And our next speaker is Sarah Kelly. Sarah is Ms. Kelly is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, coordinator of our Older Adult Services Program at Cancer Care. And Ms. Kelly is going to be addressing managing the medical and indirect costs of treatment, understanding and accessing financial assistance programs, emotional and social impact of the costs of treatment and follow-up care, and finding resources for financial help. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. As Dr. Messner said, my name is Sarah Kelly, and I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, and I'm going to be speaking, as we all have today, for a major concern for people with cancer, which is how can I pay for my care? And when I use the word care, I'm talking about not only, let's say, financial assistance for treatment, but also living expenses, those day-to-day expenses that also add up in this. You know, all of this I consider to be part of your care as you're going through this. So Ms. McCourt really talked about the cancer being an expensive illness and the financial concerns that come up with it. And it's absolutely understandable that this would be a source of stress for people. However, I think having an open conversation about the cost of cancer can help you be better informed about your financial options. And I also think it can help you reduce some of the stress and the financial impact of going through a cancer diagnosis and treatment. I think when it comes to managing those medical expenses, it really pays to be informed and also to be upfront and direct about what's happening for you. So both Ms. Wolf and Ms. McCourt really spoke in depth about understanding your insurance policy, and this is so important because you want to make sure that you're not going to be blindsided by charges and also that you're able to get access to the care that you need. So just to speak very briefly to it, you want to make sure you're reading the policy carefully, you want to understand your benefits, you want to contact your health insurance provider with any questions, and you really want to know what is the portion of the medical expense that you're responsible for paying. Your insurance company also may be able to assign you a case manager. So I would definitely ask about that. Sometimes it happens right off the bat that maybe a case manager will contact you. Sometimes it doesn't. Ask about it if you haven't been contacted, because that can be also a great source of support in this. Another piece of this is really making sure that you have a handle on your income and your expenses, because, you know, with this, you are going to have added expenses. You've got the added expenses of going through treatment and all of the things that go along with that. It could be, putting gas in the car because you have many more trips going back and forth to the treatment center. You know, those things tend to add up. So you really want to know, okay, what is my income? What are my expenses? You know, what are some of the things I can do to help myself in this? I also recommend, if you can, keeping either a diary or a place where you're writing down your expenses, or, you know, a lot of people do it on the computer now, and also keeping any communication regarding your finances in this for a couple of reasons. One, it helps you stay organized, so you do know where you are with all of this. It also helps you to catch billing errors if that comes up. You know, we always like to hope that everything is really right on track and perfect in those ways, but, you know, errors happen. So you want to make sure that you're on top of that in case that does happen. And then Dr. Saltz really talked about this in the beginning, so important, about talking to your healthcare team. And I would say as soon as possible about your financial situation. It's so important. You know, healthcare providers don't always ask patients, as Dr. Saltz was explaining, about their insurance coverage or ability to pay for out-of-pocket expenses. And then also patients don't always feel comfortable sharing that information with their provider. And it's important to resolve those issues, the financial issues, because, you know, as I said earlier, they increase the stress. But also, this could limit access to needed treatments. So you want to make sure everyone is on the same page. And Dr. Saltz used the word partnership, and I think that's such a good word for it because it is a partnership. You know, the patient and the doctor are in a partnership trying to find the best solution and the best care, and the financial piece certainly is a part of that. So, you know, patients and providers really can work together to devise ways of reducing costs and managing costs without necessarily compromising treatment. You know, the other thing that I think is important also is connecting with the patient financial services department, social worker, patient advocate. You know, I know everyone so far has brought that up in their talk, and it's such an important piece of this. It's a lot to do on your own and can be really overwhelming. So you just want to make sure that that you're doing that. Also, if you're having trouble paying bills, it really is best to just be upfront and direct about it. You know, you want to make sure that you're addressing it. If you can't pay a bill, talk to the financial department, talk to the creditors, you know, see what you can do, how you can work with them to pay it, because it certainly isn't that you don't want to pay it. Usually it's that you can't. So you really want to have those conversations so that, again, there's a partnership, you're on the same page, and you want to address it sooner than later also. So, you know, you don't have to worry about, let's say, having a bill go to collections and then to have to worry about having collection agencies call. It adds even more stress. So really addressing all of this sort of right up front, I think, is so helpful. So we've heard really, I mean, of so many things. So the benefits and entitlements from Ms. Wolf and Ms. McCourt talked about the copay assistance that's available out there. And, you know, so where else can you go to get information? And, you know, I know Ms. McCourt mentioned Cancer Care and the American Cancer Society, CancerFAC, which stands for the Cancer Financial Assistance Coalition. You know, these resources can be so helpful. And Dr. Messner had mentioned earlier, many of the resources are in your brochures. So you really want to take a look at those and reach out. You know, the larger national organizations, American Cancer Society, CancerFAC, Cancer Care, may have state-by-state resource guides to help you find local and national resources. Certainly, at Cancer Care, you can call our Hope Line, where oncology social workers can help you find those resources. We also provide some financial assistance, so that's there too. And then I do very briefly want to talk about the CancerFAC, which is the Cancer Financial Assistance Coalition, because I think it's a great resource. Basically, a group of organizations, including Cancer Care, came together to create a user-friendly online database of resources. So if you have access to the Internet, you can log on there. It's cancerfac.org, and you just put in your zip code and your diagnosis. It pulls up both local and national resources. It's a wonderful place to get a good, very comprehensive listing of resources. And then I do also want to mention the Patient Advocate Foundation, which can provide case management advocacy to really help you navigate some of these financial concerns. So, you know, with that, in conclusion, you know, you want to get informed, you want to speak up, you want to be upfront and direct about what's happening, and you want to get organized. And I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about another very important resource that I think you need on your journey, which is support, and creating a support network as an important part of your care and how Cancer Care can be a part of that. So a little about Cancer Care, and many of you know this, and it's also in the information you have, but Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Our programs include individual counseling, which we provide face-to-face in the New York area and then over the phone nationally, support groups, which we do face-to-face in New York and then over the phone nationally, and online both nationally and internationally. We have education programs like the one we're on today. We provide practical help, you know, how to navigate the healthcare system, and as I mentioned earlier, also some limited financial assistance. So those are the basic services that we do provide. And All of our services are provided by licensed master's level oncology social workers, and they're completely free of charge. And oncology social workers really are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends, so the support network. You know, we know cancer not only affects the whole person, but also those that are around them. We're also trained to help cancer patients and their families tackle the problems that accompany the disease. So, you know, today we've been discussing financial demands, also physical changes, social adjustments, psychological impact. You know, I really think adjusting and finding ways of coping with the diagnosis and treatment is an important part of the healing process. And it's actually, I think of it as part of the treatment and part of the treatment plan. So with that in mind, I just want to talk about asking for help and asking for support. Sometimes it's not the easiest thing to do, but what I want you to take home with you is that really asking for support, joining a support group, contacting a social worker, it really is a sign of strength. You don't have to do this alone. You know, in joining a support group, you're really connecting with others who are going through a similar situation or are having similar problems. With the individual counseling, it's a space that's just yours to voice some of the concerns that are coming up. And I feel these connections help lessen the isolation that many people who are diagnosed with cancer experience, and also caregivers as well, their loved ones. I think feeling well emotionally can help you better deal with the diagnosis. And as I said earlier, I consider it to be part of the treatment and the treatment plan. So I'll talk a little bit, very briefly, just about our services right now. We have a number of online support groups. If you're interested in those, you may have a listing actually in your packet, and then you can always go to our website, which is www.cancercare.org. And I actually recommend going to our website for a number of reasons. It's very comprehensive. You'll find a listing of all of our support services, our education workshops, but also just a lot of literature on coping with cancer, treatment side effects, and just a wealth of information on there. So you can definitely go to our website. We are also providing face-to-face groups, telephone groups, and as I mentioned earlier, the counseling services. If you're interested in any of these, please go to our website, or you can call us on our HOPE line, which is 1-800-813-HOPE or 1-800-813-4673. You know, I really cannot stress enough to you that, you know, we are here for you to help you as you're going through this. You know, I think we've learned a lot from today's program, and there's a lot of information to digest and get your arms around. And our social workers really are here to help you understand what it means for you. So, you know, either connect with us on our website, call us, you know, and remember that you're not alone. That really is something I'd like for you to take home with you. We're here to help you. Thanks so much for your attention and the opportunity to speak today.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. That was really excellent and really very comprehensive. And now we have time for questions. We have lots of time for questions. Thank you, all of our speakers. We now have time to take questions. And I'm going to ask Kate to bring all of our speakers on board and to actually explain to the audience how to queue up for questions. And we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. If we don't get your question, please call us at Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE at the end of the call. I'll repeat that again later on, but let's see how many questions we can take for now. Kate?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from the line of Sue P. Your line is open.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Sue.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for addressing this topic. I have CLL, leukemia, and I have been diagnosed for the last 10 and a half years. I have paid for all of my treatment out of pocket for the last 10 and a half years while living on a disability income. I have tried many things to help with the financial issues. But where I get stuck all the time, and I'm wondering if anyone has any particular advice about this, where I get stuck is that I have a doctor who recommends treatment with vitamins and herbs. And so that I have, I totally believe that I would be dead by now had I gone a conventional route. I wouldn't have had the stamina for it. But no one wants to help defray that cost, even though the cost is less than, say, a month's worth of chemo, a year's
cost.
Answer
your question and your question for us.
Yeah, the question is, what advice does anyone have for trying to get financial help for that?
Okay. Well, thank you. That's an excellent question. I think it's a question that many people ask and are concerned about. I'm going to ask Sarah if you could address that question initially, and then Sue, I think we will, and we'll also call you after the call as well to give you some additional information. But in general, if Sarah, you could just answer that in a general way in terms of just how we proceed in those situations and helping people.
Yeah, you know, it's such a difficult, it is such a difficult thing, and because I believe there's right now no patient programs that I know of that cover it, and yet so many patients are using vitamins, and doctors may be, you know, certainly prescribing that. So, you know, I don't have a good answer or a comprehensive answer for you. You know, one of the things you may want to do is talk with your doctor. I mean, that's really where I would start, who is, you know, prescribing these herbs and vitamins, and really have an honest conversation about the cost of this. Because it sounds like you feel it's helping your care, but at the same time, it's causing financial strain. So you want to have that conversation with them and find out, you know, is there anything that they can do? Are they aware of anything that could help you sort of offset some of the cost of that? Because that can become very costly very quickly.
And actually, Sue, and for others on the call with these type of questions, you know, many of the large cancer centers now have departments of integrative medicine, in which these issues are discussed in detail, and so that if you happen to be near a large, so if you're seeing an individual physician, but if you may want to get a, want to see these, the to see in your area if there is a large cancer center that does have a Department of Integrative Medicine, and to call them to see if they have a workshop or some particular help that they can give around these areas. Do any of our other wanna speakers want to add anything to that? Okay. So I hope that's been helpful to you. You clearly have been doing this for many, many years, but we will call you after the call as well to see if we can come up with some other kinds of suggestions for you. And also, I think Sarah's point of really working directly with your physicians so that they're aware, much as Dr. Saltz had said, that your physician's aware of the costs that you've been expending on some of the items that he's recommended and what those costs are like for you, and if there's some way that there might be a way of getting some assistance with that, that would be really helpful. Okay. Our next question?
Our next question comes from the line of Robert W. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I have a couple comments. I am a lymphedema patient advocate, and since 25% or more of cancer survivors will eventually have to face the problem of lymphedema, I feel obliged to make a couple comments. In 2009, a Dr. Shi did a study, probably the only one, that looked at the difference in cost of survivors with lymphedema versus those without. These were breast cancer survivors. And the breast cancer survivor with lymphedema had to spend almost twice as much per year for just maintenance and medical expenses. There are proactive ways to address this even before breast cancer surgery.
Robert, do you have a question for our speakers, or did you have a particular...
How does one get to cancer oncologists, radiologists, and doctors to get them to discuss with patients the long-term toxicities versus for every procedure that they're going to do, and allow the patient to weigh long-term toxicity versus shorter-term local recurrence? Is this possible, or am I just dreaming?
I think you're asking some very excellent questions. You know, I think also I just, in terms of lymphedema supplies, which is one issue, I think that's really not the real heart of what you're asking about, but nevertheless, in terms of the cost of lymphedema supplies, Sarah, can you comment on that in terms of for breast cancer patients?
Yeah, so, you know, the cost absolutely is an issue, and patients and caregivers are often discussing this. You know, to offset the cost of it, there are a few different programs out there. One of the places, of course, to start is with the insurance and finding out what they're going to cover with this. Are they covering supplies? Will they cover physical therapy? You know, what can they cover in this? And then, you know, the National Lymphedema Network also has a listing of resources, so that's another place to go to. And then specifically for breast cancer patients, the Susan G. Komen Foundation has a list of resources, and sometimes the local affiliates have funding available. So those are just some of the sort of resources out there to help with the actual funding for the lymphedema supply.
And then I guess I'm going to ask Dr. Saltz, if you could just address this in a general way in terms of all toxicities of treatment, not necessarily specific to breast cancer, but just in terms of the approach. Now, also going back to 2009, we're now in 2014, just how care is approached now in terms of the thinking about looking at long-term effects as well as immediate benefits.
Right. Yeah, and let me preface by saying that I don't treat breast cancer patients, so I'm not an expert in that field, although I am aware that there have been changes in preferred strategies of surgery that hopefully will reduce that side effect, because nobody would discount the importance of it. And the studies that have indicated that axillary dissection, which is, of course, a major source of lymphedema, was not as beneficial to patients as had been thought about, really, I think, will hopefully make that less of a problem. But it's a good point for discussion in terms of a patient needs to feel comfortable when consenting to any procedure that they're really consenting and being informed. And so just as it is your right to ask about what something is going to cost you, and it's important to understand what kinds of side effects, long and short term, might I expect from this drug, this operation, this procedure, this treatment, it's important to ask, and if that happens, what do we do? What are the options for treating it? What will that cost me? Is that covered? That may or may not be something that will affect the kinds of decisions you can make, but it's certainly your right to know. And again, I think it's really can't be overemphasized. You don't have to sign papers for anything or give your consent for anything until you're comfortable that your questions have been adequately answered.
That's an excellent question, Robert, and I think that the issue of more disclosure about long-term effects is really very important, and so I thank you for your question and for raising that issue. We have a question from one of our online participants about the indirect costs of travel expenses to appointments, extra child care costs that aren't covered under insurance, and what can I do about them? Sarah, could you address that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, transportation, I had mentioned it a little bit earlier in my talk, and it's a huge issue because you need to be able to get back and forth to your doctors and back and forth to treatment. It's such an important part of your care and part of your treatment itself. So, you know, you want to figure out what is available out there for you. You know, a few things. One, I will let you know, Cancer Care does provide some limited financial assistance for transportation expenses, home care expenses, and child care expenses. So please call us. You know, I can't stress that enough that we're here in terms of that. And then just checking into other resources. You know, often there are local resources that can help, so you want to go ahead and see what's available for you. Again, talking to the treatment center, definitely recommend calling the American Cancer Society. They can get you in touch with a local chapter and let you know what's available in your area. And, you know, also seeing, you know, depending on your benefits, there may be something in there that helps with transportation. There may be a local transportation service that can help you get back and forth. So you kind of want to investigate all of those options. With the child care, it's a little bit more difficult. You're more likely to find assistance from a local organization. So it's, again, figuring out what's available in your area. I would reach out to the treatment center, also to any community organizations. You know, oftentimes they are able to provide a little bit more in terms of that type of assistance. So you really want to find out what's available for you in your area.
Can I comment on that as well?
Yes, please, yes.
You know, a thought occurs to me. I saw a person for a new visit yesterday who came to see me from upstate and probably about an hour and a half of travel time each way and very much wanted to have her care here. And as honored and flattered as I am by that, I did discuss with her, look, there's considerable downside to you in the time, the stress on you, and the expense in making these trips. One of the things to think about, I said, of course, if you want to be taken care of here by me and my team, we'd be honored to do so. But we can also try to coordinate with somebody closer. We can see you for decision points and guidance, but let you get the majority of your care where your travel costs, both physical costs and financial costs, will be lower. Sometimes that's the kind of thing that would be worth bringing up in a conversation, especially if you're seeing somebody with particular expertise but traveling an extra distance to do it. Is this something that can be coordinated with somebody locally? Also important, you heard discussions before that discuss different plans, and there's in-network and out-of-network considerations, and sometimes the cost of seeing a doctor within a network is going to be dramatically lower than when you go outside that network, and you may have coverage for a percentage, but could leave you very vulnerable. So no one simple answer is going to be right for everybody. It's not a one-size-fits-all, but these are considerations that ought to come into play.
Excellent. Thank you. I hope that's been helpful. And I really want to thank all of our speakers. It's been a remarkable team of experts here. Also, I want to thank all of you who have queued up and asked such excellent questions, both on the phone and online. I do want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour education workshop, and that in planning a program like this, we do recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. And so I do want to redirect you back for any questions you didn't get to ask or any follow-up that you would like to our cancer care number, 1-800-813-HOPE, or visit our website at www.cancercare.org. Most importantly, as we conclude today, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with cancer or in coping with the cost of living with cancer or any issues related to the issues of living with cancer. I want you to know that you're now part of this cancer care community and that you can simply call us or visit our website. And you don't have to wait till something is urgent, but if something is urgent, do call us. But if it isn't, just you're thinking about something, do call us. Our oncology social workers, much like Ms. Kelly on the call, are here to listen and to help you to figure out what the best next step is or how to best help you. So, and we also have resources that we might be able to bring to bear to be of particular help to you as well. So I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may disconnect. Have a wonderful day.